to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Welcome to the Political Cesspool. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's good to be back in the studio this week at AM 1380 WLRN here in Memphis, Tennessee, broadcasting around the world and via the internet worldwide at Republic Broadcasting and republicbroadcasting.org. A week ago tonight, I was traversing the streets of the Magic Kingdom, believe it or not, taking a little weekend trip with my wife down to Disney World in Orlando, and didn't Bill Rowland do a great job? My goodness, it's easy to have good radio when you surround yourself with such talent, and I'm thankful to Bill Rowland and the team that was working very hard while I was vacationing last week. As Art Frith will attest, I'm doing pretty good for myself. That was the first time I missed since we came on. Actually, the first show I've taken off since June. Unprecedented for me. So, anyway, it was good to get out for a week, but I tell you, being gone and being away from our listening audience and the thrill of hosting this program certainly left a void within me, and so it's even better to be back. Appreciate, again, Bill Rowland and everyone else for holding down the fort last week. It's equally good, if not better than equally good, to be back with you this week. I'm excited about it. We got a great show for you tonight, my friends, and we've had a lot of great shows in our broadcast history, but I really believe that this is going to be one of the biggest ever tonight, November 29th. We've got three great guests, and I can't wait for you to hear it for yourself. I'm just going to quickly roll through our fantastic lineup for tonight here in this first segment. Then we're going to get down to business right after our first commercial break in a moment. We've got Dr. Thomas DeLorenzo coming up as our first guest. He's a professor of economics at Loyola College in Maryland. We've had him on before during one of our Confederate History Month series. He's the author of the soon-to-be classic book entitled Lincoln Unmasked, What You're Not Supposed to Know About Dishonest Abe. We had a great discussion with him about the contents of that book, and we're going to have an equally good one tonight as we talk about his latest work, which is entitled Hamilton's Curse, How Thomas Jefferson's Arch Enemy Betrayed the American Revolution and What It Means for Americans Today. Very riveting discussion we got with Dr. DeLorenzo coming up in just a matter of moments. A little later on in the program, we're going to be talking with the fearless Kathy Shadle. She's 5 feet of fury. That's the name of her blog. You're going to find out why. She's a Canadian poet, author, and blogger who's been charged with violating Canada's notorious hate speech laws. But is she scared? Not at all. And she even went so far to write a book about what's going on up there, which everyone needs to read because it's coming to America soon. It's called The Tyranny of Nice, and we're going to be talking with her about it at length tonight on the program. And we're even going to discuss her recent fisking of P.J. O'Rourke. Listen, too much to tell you in the time we got left. You're not going to want to miss our interview with Kathy Shadle. And later on tonight, ladies and gentlemen, before the clock runs out, during our third hour, the Motor City Madman himself. That's right. Ted Nugent is going to be on the program tonight. Tonight, we're going to hear his thoughts about Obama and gun control, arguably the biggest name ever to make an appearance on the political cesspool. All that and more coming up tonight. Don't go anywhere. I'm James Edwards, and the political cesspool will continue right after this on RBN.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the political cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Hi there. The political cesspool listeners are well-informed and proactive. Have you heard much about the killer MRSA in your area? Here's some information I'll bet you didn't know much about. we've come across doctors who don't know. Visit 12diseases.com, where you'll find an ebook about how to protect your child from the 12 diseases your mother never told you about. Guard parent. Things like deadly MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, rampant in hospitals, schools, and clinics, or Chagas, known well south of the border, and many others we might have heard about, but think, we don't have to worry about that. This is not some encyclopedia or complex medical book. You'll learn quickly about 12 emerging or re-emerging diseases that have horrible consequences for the health and well-being of your children. It's written in a plain, easy-to-read format that anyone can understand. That's 12diseases.com.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Howdy, gardeners. This is Mike from Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. We carry America's largest selection of heirloom seed, all non-hybrid, non-GMO, and non-Monsanto. We offer 1,200 varieties that our grandparents grew, vegetables that helped us survive the Great Depression, varieties that our founding fathers grew, and varieties that not only survive but thrive in today's gardens. All our vegetable seed is open pollinated, which means you can save your own seed from generation to generation. Want to learn more about heirloom seeds and what the government is doing to control our food supply? If so, request our free 124-page seed catalog. And today, we offer you our homestead collection, 60 full-size packs of pure heirloom seed for $83 postpaid. That's 60 fresh packets of seed for just $83. Call us today to order your free catalog or our seed collection at 866-OLD-SEED. That's 866-OLD-SEED, or go online to oldseed.com. That's oldseed.com.
Let's return to the political cesspool and our own bunch of rebels, the political cesspool guys.
So today, I'll be standing right by his side when they say he's a rebel.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. We are red hot and rolling, live, uncut, and uncensored here in the political cesspool tonight. It is Saturday night, November 29th. And we're happy to be with you here on the Republic Broadcasting Network, coming to you live from our flagship station, AM 1380, WLRM, in Memphis, Tennessee. You know, I'm a big fan of the oldies music. That's why we use it for all of our bumpers here. But I'm a big fan of Christmas music, too. So note to Art Frith, if you're listening out there, and I know you are, we got to get some Christmas bumpers before next week. We only get 1 month a year to celebrate this season, and we're going to be all about it here on the cesspool. So bring a little Christmas music, a little treat for you. We'll get back to the oldies in January. But anyway, that being said, big show tonight. There's never enough time in that first five-minute opening segment for me to say everything that I want to say, so I try to get through it real quick. But thankfully, we got three more hours tonight, so maybe, just maybe, we'll get through it all. Again, a little later on in the program tonight, you're going to hear from Kathy Shadil, author of The Tyranny of Nice. It's being promoted by the Conservative Book Club, pretty big organization, so excited to have her on. And last but certainly not least, by any stretch of the imagination, during our third hour tonight, you're going to hear from the rock and roll icon and conservative activist himself, Ted Nugent, the Motor City Madman. But first, get a load of this guy's biography. I mean, do we not give you the great guest or what? I'm really excited to welcome my good friend Dr. Thomas DeLorenzo back to the program. As I made mention of in the first segment, he's joined us before during some of our Confederate History Month series, as we talked about one of his previous books regarding Abraham Lincoln. But Dr. DeLorenzo holds a Ph.D. in economics from Virginia Tech and is currently an American economics professor at Loyola College in Maryland. Additionally, Dr. DeLorenzo is a senior faculty member of the Ludwig von Mises Institute and an affiliated scholar of the League of the South Institute, one of our favorite organizations. Dr. DeLorenzo is a columnist at lourockwell.com and mises.org. In addition, he has authored at least 10 books, including The Real Lincoln, How Capitalism Saved America, Lincoln Unmasked, and the book we're going to be having him on to talk about tonight, Hamilton's Curse, How Jefferson's Archenemy Betrayed the American Revolution and What It Means for Americans Today. Dr. DeLorenzo, without further ado, welcome back to the program. It's been far too long since we've had your company.
I'm pleased to be with you, and a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy belated Thanksgiving to you, too, my friend. Was it good for you?
Yeah, it was very good.
Always good when you can stuff your face and enjoy time with friends and family, as I certainly did a little bit of both.
Sure.
But down to business, Got a lot of questions for you, and thankfully we have you on for an extended period tonight. Cutting right to the chase, why did you author this book, and to whom did you dedicate it?
Well, I authored the book because I'd noticed over the past several years there have been a lot of very worshipful biographies of Alexander Hamilton, and at the same time, a number of books that have really are harshly critical of Hamilton's famous nemesis, Thomas Jefferson. And I sort of smelled a rat there in terms of the fact that Hamilton was a statist. He was an advocate of big centralized government, a much more active government than what the Constitution allowed for. As Treasury Secretary under George Washington, he was a big tax increaser. He supported the Sedition Act, which outlawed criticism of the government during the Adams administration. And he was generally a bad guy, in my view, in terms of his policies. Even though he was a hero of the American Revolution, in terms of his political and economic ideas, I think they're all uniformly bad. And so I thought there's room for a book that sort of sets the record straight as far as his political and economic ideas are concerned. And, for example, there was one book that was written by a man named John Steele Gordon called Hamilton's Blessing. Hamilton actually called the national debt a blessing because he thought it would tie the wealthier people of the country to the government because they would be the bondholders, and they would therefore always be in favor of raising taxes to make sure there was enough money in the treasury to pay off their bonds. And, of course, he wanted to grow government much bigger than it already was. The idea for the book, Hamilton's Curse, was sort of a counter to this book, Hamilton's Blessing. And I think it's not only Hamilton's ideas on the debt, but on central banking, on how to interpret the Constitution, on corporate welfare. I call him the founding father of crony capitalism. They're all very bad ideas, and they really are the genesis of the big problem we have with the economy today.
Well, it's interesting that, apparently, and I share your views with regard to Alexander Hamilton, and I believe you've done a service to people out there interested in the man and the subject, in so much as there should be an exposé on him, and to my knowledge, there just hasn't been any, or at least not to the extent that you've taken it. And it's also interesting to note that almost immediately after our revolution, which you would think that liberty and patriotism would be thriving, the seeds of big government were being planted by this man. Going to ask you a follow-up question, then we're going to get down into some more in-depth analysis of the book and some more in-depth questions. But I got to ask you the second part of your title. What does this mean for Americans today? Why should Americans be concerned with all the problems that we're facing today with the legacy of Alexander Hamilton?
Well, there's if you look at the great debate between Hamilton and Jefferson at the beginning of the American Republic, it really was a debate over what kind of government we would have and also what kind of economic policy we would have. I think it's important to understand that those two things were connected. Hamilton basically wanted to bring the British mercantilist system, as it was called, to America. This was basically a government for the privileged few, primarily the business elite of the country. And he and his compatriots in the Federalist Party saw that as the route to wealth and power for themselves. And Jefferson, on the other hand, was terrified about this. He thought this would destroy liberty. That's why I call him Jefferson's, not only Jefferson's archenemy, but a man who betrayed the American Revolution, because the American Revolution was fought to escape this system of a king that lorded over a mercantilist empire that basically benefited the privileged few at the expense of the masses. And I think Hamilton, who was quite the genius, Jefferson called him a political colossus. He was so impressed with his talent. He thought that it's a bad idea if you have, if you're on the paying side of an empire, but if you're on the tax collecting side of an empire, it's not a bad idea at all. And it's good to be the king, as Mel Brooks said in one of his movies.
That it is. Do you think, Dr. DeLorenzo, that Alexander Hamilton was perhaps the Rousseau of the right?
One of my chapters is called The Rousseau of the Right, and I took that phrase from a political scientist who called Hamilton that about 50 years ago in an academic journal, and it was the basic reason is that he believed that the government should be given almost unlimited power as long as it could be entrusted into the hands of someone like himself, for instance, who would use that power only in, quote, the public interest. And in my book, I run off over a dozen different phrases that Hamilton used in his speeches and his writings to say the public interest or the national interest, the common weal. He was always trying to say that. And that was basically the philosophy of the French Revolution, of Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who some people consider to be sort of the founding philosopher of communism. And, to give virtually unlimited power, supposedly, to be worked in the public interest. But, of course, the United States Constitution, the thinking behind that was exactly the opposite of that kind of philosophy. The whole idea of the Constitution was to put constraints on the power of government, not to entrust it in some sort of angel. James Madison himself, one of his famous sayings was that if men were angels, there would be no need for government at all. That's why we need a constitution, he said, to constrain the government. Men will not always act like angels.
You brought up a key word there, the constitution. We have about 3 minutes before our first commercial break, so I want to work this in. And, of course, we're going to keep you for the bulk of this first hour, so we're going to have much more discussion about this book. Coming up later, ladies and gentlemen, in addition to the other two guests I made mention of, I'm going to be offering some opinion and commentary on some other issues out there taking place in America this week, and we're going to take some of your calls. But continuing on with Dr. Thomas DeLorenzo about his book, before we go to this first break, Dr. DeLorenzo, as I said, you just mentioned the Constitution. I got to ask this question, and we'll pick up there after the commercial. What was Alexander Hamilton's view of the Constitution, and how did it differ with Jefferson's view? I know we've already touched on this.
Well, of course, Jefferson said that the government ought to be bound by the chains of the Constitution. He thought that the central government should only be doing the things that it was delegated to do by the citizens of the states in the Constitution. There are only 17 things that are listed there in Article 1, Section 8. Hamilton looked at it as exactly the opposite way. He saw the Constitution as a potential rubber stamp of approval for almost anything the government would ever want to do as long as the words of the Constitution could be properly interpreted by people like him. That's why the proponents of so-called judicial activism, which is essentially rewriting the Constitution by judges and lawyers, are fond of what they call the Hamiltonian view of the Constitution. And so he saw it as just the opposite way, and that's essentially the way our government looks at the Constitution now, as a rubber stamp of approval on just about anything. And it took many decades for us to achieve that dreadful status, but that's where we are today.
Dr. DeLorenzo, with that, we're just seconds away from our first break. Stay tuned, everybody, and sit tight. We're going to continue on with our discussion of Alexander Hamilton and what his ideas mean for America today. We continue right after this on The Political Cesspool.
Here we come, walk down the street, we get funniest looks.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of The Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
And people say we monkey around, but we're too busy singing.
Now that the election is over and the shock is beginning to wear off, Ready Reserve Foods, in an effort to get as many Americans prepared for the promised changes of the new administration and to help you and your family survive the global economic crash. Ready Reserve is offering the pre-inauguration special. Between now and January 20th, 2009, all food units U1 through U7 are being offered at wholesale prices. That's a 33% savings. A year's supply of meals starts as low as 73 cents per meal. Ready Reserve Food offers only the highest quality dehydrated food, packed in double enameled cans in an inert nitrogen atmosphere, allowing a 15-plus year shelf life. Ready Reserve has been manufacturing since 1972, giving them the freedom to offer you amazing savings. Great-tasting Ready Reserve Foods at wholesale prices. Order now at ReadyReserveFoods.com or call today, 1-800-453-2202. That's 1-800-453-2202.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasermedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Here's something. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, red, purple, thin, fat, or oblong. If you're eating food, you need to clean out the inside of your body. Why? Because undigested food and toxic chemicals build up in the digestive tract every day. If you think this can't hurt you, think again. It already has. Indigestion, bloating, gas, irregularity, and constipation are all connected to this toxic buildup. Here's what you can do about it. Take a supplement called AlloCleanse. It's all natural, and it gently cleanses the entire digestive tract. All that leftover junk inside your body gets flushed away, and your bathroom habits suddenly become a whole lot smoother. Laugh all you want, but it's true. And it's why millions of people use AlloCleanse daily. They get more energy, they're healthier, and they look better. You'd be surprised. To try AlloCleanse risk-free, call 1-800-547-6603. That's 1-800-547-6603. Or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click onto the AlloEase colon banner and learn more about this product.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. To get on the show, call toll-free at 1-800-313-9443. And now here's your host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Thank you, Art Frith. And, of course, he's right, everyone. I am your host, James Edwards. It's great to be back with you and great to be live on the air tonight with our good friend, Dr. Thomas DeLorenzo. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to want to stick with us all the way until midnight Central Time tonight. Ted Nugent coming up a little later on in the program. Very big interview. You're not going to want to miss what he has to say. And let me tell you, he's really fired up to tell you about it. Very high-energy guy. Had the opportunity to talk with him about a week ago in preparation for this interview, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But we are continuing on right now with the aforementioned Dr. DeLorenzo. And, you know, we like to cover all the issues here of importance to our people here on the Political Cesspool. We cover the spectrum of contemporary political issues, but we also like to take the time to look back to the past and ask the rhetorical question of how we got here. And it could be argued, I think very effectively, as we're doing right now, that the seeds of big government, the seeds that eventually grew into this Leviathan that we're battling right now, might have been planted by Alexander Hamilton. And that being said, we're going to continue on with our examination of Hamilton, and we are doing so with the academic and the scholar, Dr. Thomas J. DeLorenzo. Dr. DeLorenzo, that being said, why do so many academic scholars and politicians, for that matter, repeat Hamilton's view and agree with it?
Well, yeah, it's probably no surprise to you that most academics are to the left of the political spectrum. And so they sort of naturally like Hamilton's idea of activist government. For example, in Washington, D.C., of all the think tanks, the oldest one is the Brookings Institution. And it's sort of where out-of-power Democrats have hung their hats for years, just like the Heritage Foundation is where when the Republicans are out of power, they go to the some of them go to the Heritage Foundation or the American Enterprise Institute. But the Brookings Institution has a big program underway of all sorts of recommendations for a sort of interventionist economic policies, and it's called the Hamilton Project. So they admire Hamilton because he was an interventionist on economics like themselves. There are others. Hamilton's view of government, he thought the purpose of government, in his words, was to pursue imperial glory or an empire. Jefferson, on the other hand, said, well, no, the purpose of government is to protect rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that's it. And so you have another group of academics who like this idea of imperial glory and nation building and having an empire that sort of is the policeman of the world. The so-called neoconservatives, for example, a lot of them are big fans of Hamilton for that reason. But if you're a Jeffersonian, you'll be sort of not only opposed but frightened by these ideas of Hamilton's.
Quick follow-up question to that, because I know the impending economic collapse or certainly the economic uncertainties are weighing heavily on everyone's mind. We've had a continuing series with people like Paul Craig Roberts examining the state of the economy. Does Hamilton's legacy of perpetual government debt affect Americans today in this realm?
Well, yeah. You know, throughout American history, there have been the two views of debt, too, were Hamiltonian and Jeffersonian. Hamilton called the public debt a blessing because he thought it would help grow the government, and it sure does. It disguises the cost of government by imposing a big burden of government on future generations so that we can benefit now from government spending and put the tax bill off 20 or 30 years in the future. Jefferson thought that was unwise and immoral, and he only favored debt for such things as financing a war or something that is absolutely necessary, but for no longer than 19 years. And if you have a debt, you should also impose a tax that was earmarked specifically to pay off the debt. And after Jefferson became president, he cut the public debt in about in half. And by the time you get to the 1830s, Andrew Jackson paid off all of the public debt in America. And really up until about World War One, with the exception of the Civil War, the Jeffersonian view of debt prevailed, and the governments tried mightily, for the most part, in the United States history, to whittle down the debt. But then that all exploded with Woodrow Wilson and World War One, the 20th century. And, of course, now we have a $10 trillion national debt. And if you count the unfunded liabilities of the government, it's probably much more like $70 or $80 trillion, which is an unimaginable amount of money. So that every baby born today has a six-figure tax bill attached to its toe, so to speak, in terms of its share of the national debt.
So this is, in essence, the legacy that Hamilton left us when it comes to monetary policy.
It sure is. Hamilton was also the what the Federal Reserve Board itself calls the founding father of central banking in America. Another of the big debates between Hamilton and Jefferson was over whether or not we should have a bank in the nation's capital run by politicians and partly capitalized by tax dollars. Jefferson, of course, said that's a very bad idea. They'll politicize the economy. They'll crowd out the real private banking system. And, of course, he was absolutely correct. But Hamilton and his followers also believed that such a bank would be very useful in allowing them to print money and to pursue their goals of empire and imperial glory and permanent political power. And there was a debate in my book, Hamilton's Curse. I talk about the debate that went on for decades over this. President Andrew Jackson vetoed the refunding of the first bank.
Hey, step tight, Dr. DeLorenzo. We're going to go to break. We're going to pick it up right there. Sorry to cut you off.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the political cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
That's just a little bit more than the law of the law.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Howdy, gardeners. This is Mike from Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. We carry America's largest selection of heirloom seed, all non-hybrid, non-GMO, and non-Monsanto. We offer 1,200 varieties that our grandparents grew, vegetables that helped us survive the Great Depression, varieties that our founding fathers grew, and varieties that not only survive but thrive in today's gardens. All our vegetable seed is open-pollinated, which means you can save your own seed from generation to generation. Want to learn more about heirloom seeds and what the government is doing to control our food supply? If so, request our free 124-page seed catalog. And today, we offer you our Homestead Collection, 60 full-size packs of pure heirloom seed for $83 postpaid. That's 60 fresh packets of seed for just $83. Call us today to order your free catalog or our seed collection at 866-OLD-SEED. That's 866-OLD-SEED, or go online to oldseed.com. That's oldseed.com.
Deep in the Brazilian rainforest of the Amazon grows the acai berry. Considered to be one of nature's most complete and healthy foods, the acai berry is loaded with antioxidants, amino acids, essential omegas, fibers, phytonutrients, and protein. A superfood? Yes. YourLivingFruit.com now brings the acai product, the timing, the company, the opportunity, and the cause to you. Some of the health benefits associated with the acai berry are increase in sustained energy, help with cholesterol management, improvement of digestive system, strengthening immune system, and more. Acai berry boasts 10 times the antioxidant benefits of grapes and twice that of blueberries. Are acai berry health benefits right for you? Is the opportunity right for you? Find out at YourLivingFruit.com. YourLivingFruit.com will show you the remarkable and continually documented health benefits of the acai berry. Visit YourLivingFruit.com. That's YourLivingFruit.com.
And now, let's return to the political cesspool.
I guess, as you can probably have, you could tell by now, ladies and gentlemen, that I am hosting the show solo tonight. I normally make mention of that at the very top of the program. Bill Rowland taking the night off tonight, but that's okay. He carried the load for me last week, so I'm giving him the night off. We'll be back together next week, and next week we got a great show for you. Let me tell you, Joe Sobrin, the legendary Joe Sobrin, is going to be our guest next week, along with Alan Stang, a fellow RBN radio host. So good show next week, great show tonight, and I'm happy to be here with you, along with our friend Dr. Thomas DeLorenzo. We're talking about Alexander Hamilton, and by the time we're done with this interview, hopefully you won't look at Alexander Hamilton in the same light. Just because he's on the $10 bill doesn't mean he was a good guy. But, you know, that being said, there's a lot of scumbags that are on the dollar bill, am I right? I mean, Lincoln and Grant, so on and so forth. I'm right about that, right, Tom? A lot of scumbags on our bills.
Yeah, we all politicians grace all of our currency. You know, not every country in the world puts dead politicians on their money.
Yeah, and
some of them just
too,
put mountains and lakes and things like that.
All right. That being said, I guess we should get back to some serious issues, and this is a very serious issue. What we're discussing tonight, of course, we're talking with Dr. Thomas DeLorenzo about his most recent book, which is Hamilton's Curse, Hamilton's Curse. And we ran abruptly into that commercial break. It was kind of like a brick wall there, Tom. I didn't mean to cut you off. You were talking about or concluding a thought on the negative effect left to us with regards to our monetary policy by Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah, the central bank has certainly been a curse on America. There was a 120-year battle over the creation of a central bank. Alexander Hamilton created the first one. There was a debate, once again, between him and Jefferson over the creation of a bank run by politicians out of the nation's capital. And we did get that. And then it was destroyed by Andrew Jackson. And it was partially revived by the Lincoln administration with the National Currency Act in the 1860s. But then we didn't really get the Fed until 1913. So this political crusade continued to have a government monopoly of the money supply. And it lasted for 120 years. And then, of course, as soon as we got this fully centralized banking system, this monetary monopoly, it started creating boom and bust cycles, beginning with the Great Depression. Printing too much money, causing too much investment in places where businesses really shouldn't have been investing and over-investing, and creating bubbles in the markets, and the bubbles ultimately burst. That was the cause of the Great Depression, and it's done the same thing periodically all along, including the current dilemma, which is really about 90% caused by the Greenspan Fed's expansionary monetary policies of after 2001.
And so there you have it, folks.
The Fed itself brags that Hamilton is their founding father, but that's nothing to brag about.
When your 401k got decimated last month, who can you thank? Wouldn't you know it, Alexander Hamilton?
Yeah.
But it's shifting gears right now, Tom. Oh, by the way, I just want to infuse a point here to the listening audience. We're going to be talking about a lot of vast and varied issues throughout the second and third hour of the program tonight, and I'm going to need your input and your phone calls. But if you want to chime in on this issue, very, very riveting discussion I think we're having here, something you're probably not going to hear on any other program but this one. And we want to know your thoughts, and if you have a question for the very esteemed Dr. DeLorenzo, give us a call. You know the number, 1-800-313-9443, talking about the book Hamilton's Curse, How Jefferson's Arch Enemy Betrayed the American Revolution, and what it means for us today. Give us a call, 1-800-313-9443. We've been talking a lot about the impact, the negative impact Alexander Hamilton left on our economic and monetary policies. But I want to shift gears slightly, Tom, and ask you this. Who was John Marshall, and how did Alexander Hamilton leave another indirect mark, this time on the American court system through John Marshall?
Well, John Marshall was the Chief Justice of the United States from 1801 until his death in 1835, and he was a protege of Alexander Hamilton's. He was the Secretary of State in the John Adams administration, and he was a Federalist. That was his party, like Hamilton. And to give an idea of his impact on the legal system, I had an email from a law student at New York University a while back. And he heard that I'd written this book that's critical of Hamilton, and he thanked me for it because he said his law professors at NYU are constantly preaching about the Hamiltonian interpretation of the Constitution, which allows for the biggest possible expansion of government and essentially no constraints on government by the Constitution. And he said he was welcoming the fact that somebody finally is criticizing Hamilton in this regard. But Hamilton really was a clever, if not ingenious, lawyer. And a lot of the bad ideas that people have been complaining about the court system for decades were initiated or invented by Hamilton. For example, he was the inventor of the idea of implied powers of the Constitution. In one of his debates with Jefferson, he essentially said, if you read between the lines, you'll see that there are all sorts of implied powers, such as the power to create a central bank. And Jefferson said, well, I have read between the lines, and there's nothing but blank space there. That was essentially his argument. But Hamilton, in a series of very long reports and government documents, really taught generations of lawyers how to use language in a way that essentially subverts the Constitution. And one of the chapters of my book is entitled Hamilton's Disciple, How John Marshall Subverted the Constitution. And for 35 years, he put to work this idea of implied powers. Hamilton also invented out of thin air the notion that the states were never sovereign over the federal government, which is probably the biggest lie in all of American political history, because, of course, the Constitution itself says that the way the Constitution would be ratified would be by the states. and they were sovereign. But that was the argument that Hamilton made, and also Marshall codified that in his legal decisions as the Chief Justice of the United States. He authorized federal power that is not in the Constitution by simply saying the states were never sovereign, therefore the federal courts, for example, can veto state legislation, whereas the Constitution really never intended for the federal courts to have veto power over state legislation.
Do you think in this way John Marshall rewrote history?
Yes, he did rewrite history, and the advocates of centralized governmental power ever since then have used this argument. That would be the Whig Party after, in the 1830s, 40s, and 50s, and then the Republican Party under Lincoln. Lincoln himself made the exact same arguments to justify his invasion of the southern states, for example. He said that they were never sovereign, therefore they have no right to secede. But Alexander Hamilton was the inventor of that notion.
Interesting. Let me ask you this. You've talked about two very differing political philosophies, the Jeffersonian and the Hamiltonian. How did the debate between Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton and their political philosophies, I should say, rage onwards after their death? Certainly it still does today. You've already made mention of that.
Yeah, well, it certainly did. It sort of set the template for American political debate in for much of the 19th century, really. And decades before that. And the way it raged on was his followers essentially wanted to bring the system of crony capitalism that existed in Europe, especially in England, here, as I said earlier, and they wanted to lord over it. They wanted to be the ones that would control the dispensation of what we today call pork barrel spending, financed by a central bank and corporate subsidies, what we today call corporate welfare. They used fancy language in the 19th century. They called it internal improvements, but it was really just corporate welfare. And, of course, what we see today with the bailout that's in the news today is this whole system run wild of corporate welfare. And so this, you know, it sounds kind of boring, but it was, you know, the heart of a huge economic debate in American history that goes right up to today between the proponents and opponents of this system of crony capitalism, which is essentially the system we have cemented into place now. And it's basically a rotten system. It's government for the privileged few, and it's primarily, you know, look at what we're seeing. All of us taxpayers are being taxed now to pay for the blunders of millionaires on Wall Street and elsewhere.
That's
not a rotten system. I don't know what is.
Yeah, it's pretty damn rotten. We've got a caller on the line now with a question or comment for Dr. DeLorenzo. Welcome to the Political Cesspool.
Good evening.
Yeah, good evening. What can we do for you?
Yeah. Well, I think it's been, I think your host or your guest will agree that it's been pretty well established that Hamilton was an agent of the Rothschilds banking house out of Europe.
Dr. DeLorenzo, any comment on that? Do you agree,
disagree? I've heard that theory, but I don't know if it's well established or not. I think Hamilton had his own designs. I don't think he needed to be anyone's agent. He was certainly associated with Robert Morris, who was a wealthy Philadelphia businessman and had a trading company, and some in the New York banking industry were sort of his backers. That was the financial backbone of the Federalist Party. And so I don't think he needed to go to Europe to have a special interest backing. That was the backing of his party. It was Wall Street, New York, Philadelphia business elite, the New England business elite. They're the people who he directly dealt with and was actually in business with when he was a private lawyer. And so I don't think you need to look to Europe for any kind of special interest influence.
This brings
in the United States.
This brings up an interesting follow-up question that I have, is that, you know, we were talking about the two ideologies, Jeffersonian versus Hamiltonian. And I think that you could argue whether or not which one has triumphed in the minds of the American people, but I don't think there's much doubt which ideology has triumphed in the minds of the political elite that are running our country. How did the Hamiltonian philosophy triumph, Dr. DeLorenzo?
Well, you know, in my book Hamilton's Curse, much of it triumphed through the Civil War, or I call it the War to Prevent Southern Independence, because the whole idea that the states were sovereign, states' rights, the idea of states' rights, was the way in which the Founding Fathers intended to have the citizens have a check on federal power. But once that check was gone, once there was no longer a threat of nullifying unconstitutional federal laws or even secession, the government itself, the federal government, became the sole decision maker with regard to what the limits on its own powers would be. And, of course, it very quickly decided that there should be no limits on its powers. And so I think that was a major breaking point. And then in my book, I have a chapter entitled The Hamiltonian Revolution of 1913. And that really put the final nails in the coffin of citizen control of government and created this Hamiltonian empire that we now live under. And because in that one year, we had the central bank, which gave the government the ability to print money in an unlimited way, legalized counterfeiting, essentially. The income tax came in 1913. And the 17th Amendment to the Constitution, which allowed for the direct election of senators. And before that, state legislatures appointed senators so that if a senator went to Washington and decided that he would vote in the interest of special interests but not in the interest of the folks back home, he could be fired on the spot by the state legislature. And there were many instances where that did happen. But once we had direct elections, we created the system that we have now where a senator from Tennessee can go to California and New York to raise money for his or her campaign, and therefore he or she is beholden to people in New York and California and not necessarily the people in Tennessee. And that totally centralized control in Washington, D.C., and I think that really cemented into place the Hamiltonian system. And, you know, one of my articles that I've written on the Internet was about Grover Cleveland, who was president in the 1880s, and I called him the last good Democrat. And he was probably the last Jeffersonian president we ever had. He wasn't perfect. No human being is. But as far as philosophy goes, he was probably the last one we had who was true to Jeffersonian principles.
Pretty sad you have to go back that far to find a decent president. But
yeah.
We got another caller on the line very quickly before we go to our next commercial break. Thanks for listening to the Cesspool. You're on the air.
Yes, no, this is really a wonderful show. And yeah, it is sobering to hear that it goes that far back. I didn't think, you know, the attempts in subverting the Constitution went that far back. Well, my question is this. I'm wondering, regarding Hamilton, did he happen to have, I guess, a long-term vision of a kind of proto-imperialism for America within, you know, across the globe? What did he really want? What was his sort of personal ethics, if you will, if you can call it ethics? What was his ethos regarding the subversion of the Constitution? Was it to really establish a kind of proto-imperialism for America across the world in the end?
Very good question, and thanks for the call and the comment. Dr. DeLorenzo, your answer.
Yes, I think you'd be very happy with the system that we have finally created. And if you read some of the biographies, especially the older biographies of Hamilton, there's the famous Yale sociologist named William Graham Sumner wrote a biography in 1905, which is outstanding. And there were some sort of 1930s-era biographies of him. And they every one of them remarked about how what an egomaniac Hamilton was, which, you know, I assume just about anybody who's in high political office probably is an egomaniac. And so when he talked about imperial glory and empire and he wanted to start a war with France, I think it fed his ego a lot. It was like, you know, he would have been a key figure in all these things. And so I think that goes a long way toward explaining his motivation toward this. And because at the time, everybody understood that wars never are in the best interest of the people, who he always was speaking in favor of, the people, the public. War is always, if they ever benefit anybody, it's the war profiteers and the governments, you know, of the winning side anyway. But the people, all they do is pay taxes and fight and die and suffer from war. But Hamilton was sort of the original neoconservative. He wanted to, you know, wage war around the world for the purpose of imperial glory. And that kind of thinking has prevailed. You know, we do have an empire with, 150-some countries where we have a military base of some kind in the world now. And his defenders would probably say he wouldn't have advocated something that excessive.
Dr. DeLorenzo, hold that thought. We're going to wrap this up right after the commercial break. Still 2 hours to come in tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool. But if you want ordering information about this book, you're going to want to stay tuned. We'll give it to you right after this.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Here's something. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, red, purple, thin, fat, or oblong. If you're eating food, you need to clean out the inside of your body. Why? Because undigested food and toxic chemicals build up in the digestive tract every day. If you think this can't hurt you, think again. It already has. Indigestion, bloating, gas, irregularity, and constipation are all connected to this toxic buildup. Here's what you can do about it. Take a supplement called AlloCleanse. It's all natural, and it gently cleanses the entire digestive tract. All that leftover junk inside your body gets flushed away, and your bathroom habits suddenly become a whole lot smoother. Laugh all you want, but it's true. And it's why millions of people use AlloCleanse daily. They get more energy, they're healthier, and they look better. You'd be surprised. To try AlloCleanse risk-free, call 1-800-547-6603. That's 1-800-547-6603. Or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click onto the AlloEase colon banner and learn more about this product.
You never know when an emergency will strike. Whether it's a hurricane, tornado, blizzard, or earthquake, everyone listening to me right now could find themselves without food and power with little or no advance warning. With over 14 years' experience, Ready Made Resources stands ready to assist you to be prepared. The Keita Den Barrio Microfilter is a lightning-fast water filtering system that removes waterborne bacteria and cysts, and it also improves the taste of water. Ready Made Resources carries Mountain House Foods, the number one lightweight, compact, great-tasting food choice that you should have stored away as part of your emergency preparedness kit. There's free shipping on both of these items. For more information, go online at www.readymaderesources.com or call toll-free 1-800-627-3809. Ready Made Resources is here to help you be prepared.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. To get on the show, call toll-free at 1-800-313-9443. And now here's your host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
You know, I do believe this is my favorite radio show. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool, everyone. Time going by far too fast. Once again, we already find ourselves near the end of our first hour. Very good discussion, you know. Even though I'm the host of this show, I learn something every show, just like I hope all of you do. And we've had a great discussion here with Dr. Thomas DeLorenzo. I'm going to ask him a quick follow-up question, and then we're going to find out some ordering information so you can get a copy of this book we've been talking about for the first hour. It is, of course, titled Hamilton's Curse, How Jefferson's Archenemy Betrayed the American Revolution and What It Means for Americans Today. Dr. DeLorenzo, give you an opportunity to offer a summation here. How do we end Hamilton's curse?
How do we end Hamilton's curse? Well, I do have a chapter. My final chapter is Ending Hamilton's Curse. But, the basic problems are, the system that we have today of crony capitalism, executive power run amok, or sort of a dictatorial president, centralized government, monetary monopoly, excessive taxation. These are all ideas that stem from Hamilton. And the first step along the way, I think, is we really have to seriously think not in finding some new savior, a new Ronald Reagan from the conservative perspective or a new Franklin Roosevelt from the liberals' perspective, but we need to think about the devolution of power away from the center, away from Washington in different ways. In American history, that has meant citizens of the states have taken the bull by the horns in the past and have nullified federal laws and said, well, we think this is unconstitutional and we're not going to obey it. Of course, secession happened. The New England Federalists were the first to try to secede after Jefferson was elected. And I know that's sort of a dirty word, secession, but it may have to come to that.
Hey, not to me,
buddy. We bankrupt ourselves.
It's a beautiful word to me.
Pardon?
Secession is a beautiful word to me and a romantic notion. I mean, I think it's one that should get a lot more serious discussion than it's been getting lately. And I guess the last several decades.
Sure.
But no, it's something that should be looked at absolutely. And I don't want to get too far off the beaten path. But anytime I hear that word, my ears perk up.
Well, Jefferson, shortly before he died, he wrote letters saying he thought that America would be broken up into maybe 5, 6, or 7 different republics. And he said, we would wish them all well because they will all be our children. He didn't say we should raise an army and bomb their cities and kill their citizens if they were to ever try such a thing. And that would have been a much better alternative, I think.
Well, there's no doubt about that. We're going to have you back on during Confederate History Month to give a more in-depth analysis on that. We got 30 seconds left, Dr. DeLorenzo. I have to ask you how people can get a copy of your book.
You can buy it wherever books are sold. It's a Random House book. You can get it on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, any bookstore can order it if they don't have it in stock.
Hey, you can't beat that, ladies and gentlemen. It's not one of these books you have to find in some obscure corner of the Internet. Random House doesn't get much bigger than that. The book, once again, is Hamilton's Curse, How Jefferson's Archenemy Betrayed the American Revolution and What It Means for Americans Today, authored by our good friend Dr. Thomas J. DeLorenzo. Get it at Barnes & Noble. Get it anywhere. And Dr. DeLorenzo, we got to go, but thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, with more when the Political Festival continues on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Don't go away. Hour number 2 of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.